All right, good morning, everybody. We had so much fun making that video, creating the Azure team. I think it's a good intro. Like Carmen says, don't take things, make it fun, right? We need to make our work fun as well. So my session is gonna be what's new in Microsoft Azure Infrastructure as a Service. And I deliberately called it what's new and not everything that's new in Microsoft Azure IaaS, because there's so much that has changed in the past 12 months. Well, last year I was able to talk about Azure AD. Today I'll highlight some of the new things that became general available in the last couple of months within Microsoft Azure Infrastructure as a Service. I'll not be talking about the PaaS side. So my name is Maarten Goed. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm a Microsoft Cloud and Data Center MVP. And if you have any questions or follow-ups, et cetera, you can certainly follow me on Twitter and I'll engage with you there on some of the content. Now, like Brad said in his keynote, cloud is a fact of life. Companies are using it massively for instance, their productivity solution using Office 365. But also when you're using Office 365, you're already using a part of Azure as the tenant will be in Azure AD. Now, cloud is a fact of life everywhere throughout the world, and what I want to show you is how Microsoft Azure today delivers some of the functionality that you might need in your enterprise with your cloud strategy. Now, we've talked about this in the keynote quite a bit, but Microsoft is different from all the other parties out there like Google and Amazon because they run at hyperscale. They have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of servers they run. They need to automate at big scale, which they then can take their learnings and put them on-premise as part of things like Windows Server and System Center. It's enterprise grade, where enterprise thinking is in the DNA of Microsoft, and all these options you get with Microsoft Azure are thought out of using for an enterprise. So we're gonna see some of those options in the demos. And it's hybrid, where you have a choice. You can either embrace public cloud Azure infrastructure as a service, you can embrace Hyper-V on-premises, and even hosts today in the CloudOS network will offer things like Windows Azure Pack as part of a solution for you to take that same hybrid story from an hoster and a local player. So it's a consistent story where the technology is delivered on all these three areas for a public offering, a private offering, and a hosted offering. And I guess that's how Microsoft Azure differentiates from other parties out there. Brad already told there's 19 regions at this moment. Two came online late last year in Australia. There's a new dedicated region for the US government. It's called the Government Cloud, where there's specific rules and specific things you can use there. And there's data centers in India and other places around the world coming soon, so there's a lot of things you can use in your region already, and certainly here in the US as well. Now, the thing I'd like to show you first is the new portal. Who's already been using the new Azure portal? Okay, a couple of hands, yeah. Probably everybody knows the old portal where you create your VMs, create your storage, create your networks. The new world is the new portal where it brings the DevOps story to you. It brings the best in Azure. It ties into things like Visual Studio. You can do app lifecycle management. You can still, of course, configure, provision, and monitor your infrastructure elements, but it bridges the gap between the development world and I guess the IT operations world. So there's a new portal. It's still in preview. It should become general available somewhere this year. And we're gonna look in the new portal, how it works and what we can do there as opposed to the old portal. So let's switch. So I'm connected here. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna, instead of go to manage.azure.com, we're gonna go to portal.azure.com. Of course, it's gonna ask me for my credentials. I'm gonna use my Microsoft account, which is tied to four subscriptions, which I can then use in the new portal. You see it has a new look and feel. It looks a bit like how we use Win8 and some of the new design language that Microsoft has with the tiles. And if we make it full screen, we can probably see it better. Here we go. So it's still in preview, and when you log in, you get an overview of the service health of Azure itself. You can look at your subscriptions, for instance, for usage, billing, and finances. We can do a tour around all the Azure functionality, and there's a couple of tiles I pinned to the start screen. Now, if we go here in the top, you actually see that I'm logged in with my live ID, but there's a couple of other Azure AD directories that I can use for this portal. And there's things like settings, customize, feedback, help support, and of course, going back to the current portal as well. If we go to settings, we can do basic stuff like choosing the color. We can hide the startboard. We can hide labels, etc. And for this demo, because we're in the universe, the dark side of the universe, we'll switch to black. And we can customize. So if we go back to this pane, say customize, you actually see that I can drag stuff around. I can actually minimize stuff. I can unpin it from the startboard, for instance. So I can make my own startboard with the VMs, the resources, the storage, all the stuff I need to do my work and get an overview at a glance. So you can certainly customize it there. If we go to browse all, then we see all the stuff I have enabled in Microsoft Azure for my subscriptions. So we have things like application insights, resource groups, subscriptions, we have virtual machines, virtual networks, websites, etc. And if I go to resource groups, then you see, for instance, VM group. I've created the resource group. And if I maximize, there's a couple of VMs in there running in this resource group that I'm using, VM Basic A1 and VM Standard D1 that I'm using. So this gives me a bit of an overview of the resources I'm using. I can get there from either the startboard where I just was, or I can go here on the left-hand side and use browse and say everything. Now, when I go to VM Basic A1, those are two VMs I created beforehand, and I maximize this blade. I get a basic understanding of this VM. The VM is running. At this moment, I can restart it. I can do settings. I see which resource group it belongs to, things like the DNS name, the virtual IP address, etc. And I can go to all settings and manipulate things like, for instance, the IP addresses. And then things you used to do in PowerShell, like setting a fixed IP address, you can now do from this new portal. So the new portal exposes a lot of properties both here through the UI and things you'd be using through PowerShell in the past, and you can do both now. And going forward, all new functionality will be added to this portal. And all the older functionality, the current functionality, for instance, with your Active Directory, will also be brought into this new portal into the future. So this is a new portal, and I encourage you guys to start using it. The resource groups is really where the magic is, where you can tie all these resources together and deliver a service for your organization. Currently, mine only has VMs, but you can certainly add other stuff like storage, websites, etc., to your resource group. So that's the new portal. I guess that's a quick overview of that. One of the things that we saw in the last few months is that Microsoft came out with a couple of new virtual machine types. We already had the A-series, A1, A2, etc. And since a couple of weeks, we now have the A8 and the A9 series. You can see from the table here is that mainly the big change is that we get more memory. So it's still the same A-series VM with your storage, your maximum data disks of 16. But it has 56 gigabytes of storage for the A8, and it has 112 gigabyte storage for the A9. Now, the cool thing with the A8 and the A9 is that you actually get a second RDMA-capable InfiniBand network. So if you have high-speed data transfers that need to occur between VMs, maybe for HPC applications, et cetera, the A8 and the A9 don't only deliver on extra memory, but it certainly also gives you ability to do faster transfers between VMs for these high-performance workloads. So A8, A9 now generally available in all of the Azure regions. Now, the thing that was announced late last year is the D-series. So we know the A-series. The new thing about D-series is they have faster CPUs. So if there are workloads that can take advantage of computing, then you can certainly look at the D-series. And the other big thing is solid-state drives. So the temporary drive, every VM gets a D drive, a temporary drive, is now instead of traditional disks and traditional spindles, you get solid-state disks, and you get much, much faster IOPS as opposed to the A-series. So if there's anything that needs temporary storage, maybe you're running SQL 2014, you want to make use of faster storage on the D drive, you look at the D-series and you can use those. So workloads that can leverage caching can use those. And there's a better core to RAM ratio for the D-series. As you can see here in the table, there's a D1 all the way up to a D14, again with 112 gigabytes of memory. And the temp disk growth, you get up to 16 of those disks to provide temporary storage for bigger workloads. Now, this is cool. The other thing that was announced is the G-series, or as the legend goes, the Godzilla series. So with G1 all the way up to G5, you get up to 448 gigabytes of memory, and that's a lot. And if you look at the temp storage, again, solid state, so very fast, we can do almost 6.5 terabytes of temporary storage, and we can go up the way to 50,000 IOPS if we need. So any workload, as big as it gets, we can now run in Azure, of course. You're going to pay a little bit more than an A1, I guess. But you could use those for high-performance workloads, large VMs, and they also get an even faster processor, the Xeon E5 third generation. So the G-series, perfect if you have any bigger workloads you need to run. So let's have a look at those. Let us go back to the new portal. We have the overview, and what I want to do is create a new VM and give you an understanding of how that goes in a new portal. So here on the bottom, you actually see that there's a plus sign, there's a new sign, and I can click on that, and it gives me an option to create a new item. And in my case, I want to have a VM based on Windows Server 2012. So we're going to click that one. We should select a couple of things, so we should give it a name. So we'll say VM Grinder. We'll give it a username, SCU, and we'll give it a password, of course. And then we can select subscription. So I have two that I can use the VMs in. I'll say MSDN. And then we'll also pick a location. Here we go. Oh, there we go. We should have this one. Yep. Location. And if we want to take a G-series, the G-series is now available in West US. In East US and East US 2. So I'll take East US, and then we can go to the pricing tier. We get the option to do the A1, the A2, A6, just a quick selection, or we can drill down and say, hey, I want to do, like you see here, a G1, a G2, G3, all the way up to G5. Now the G1 is probably going to be fast enough for this demo, so I'll just select that one, say G1, and it's going to give me two cores, 28 gigs of memory, going to have four data disks. I'm going to have an ability to run almost 2,000 IOPS and autoscale, of course. So we'll do select. And then we have some other configuration. For instance, the resource group. We'll take the VM group again and some other configuration. So we can do things like network. Is there a specific VM network that you want to attach to? So we'll select this one, use an existing virtual network. That's in VM Basic is in West Europe, so I need to create a new network. I can give it a subnet, a domain name, the IP addresses we talked about. Let's say I want to do a static IP address. I can just select it here now, but we use DHCP. And we can make all these settings. And, of course, a storage account. If there's a specific storage account you want to use, you can enable diagnostics, some new performance monitoring, and all these kinds of things you can do from the new portal. So what I'll do is I'll hit OK. I'll say create. And we'll let this run for a couple of minutes while we do the other demos, and we'll see when this gets provisioned. So I have the VM Basic A1 and the VM Standard D1 deployed. So Basic A1 will give me probably like roughly 300 IOPS, and Standard D1, because I'm doing solid-state disks, the temporary storage should go up 1,000-plus all the way up to potentially 2,000-plus as well. So what I'll do is I'll remote into those two machines. I prepared the remote desktop connection using Royal TS, and I'll take the basic A1, Here we go. And we'll take the standard D1, and we'll connect through them through remote desktop. And what I'm going to show you is how these IOPS differ from each other. So unless everybody's downloading the cool new A-Team video, I should be able to connect. There we go. This is the A1, just a basic disk on temporary storage, and this is the D1. Okay, cool. So I'll start a tool called Iomada. It's a free community tool. You can download it if you want to try it on some of your own servers. And what we'll do is we'll take the D drive. So I'll select the D drive and say default access specifications. And I want to run an IO query on it. I want to have update frequency of 1 second and hit run. We'll give it a name, SCU 2015. But it will show and store the results. And if we zoom in on that, we see that the A1 delivers roughly 260, 270 IOPS at the moment for its temporary storage. So it's perfectly in line with our expectations. It's regular disk under there, regular spindle, so 250, 260 IOPS we saw there. Now the standard D1, there we go, will also start the IOMeter. And again, this one has two disks as well. We get the temporary storage. Now, behind the D drive, there's now solid state storage. So I'll say access specifications default. Let's update it every second so we can see the results. Start the query, and we will say SCU 2015 as well in this VM. And going up to the dial. We already see it's delivering roughly 1,350 IOPS per second. So for the same drive, but now backed by solid state storage, we get, of course, more IOPS. So that's cool if you want to take use of this for specific workloads. For instance, SQL 2014 has a configuration where you can make use of this cache and even get better performing SQL performance there. So this is how it is done, and I guess I'll still create and come back to the G-Series VM in a couple of minutes. So we can take use of the VMs for any workload. We now have a configuration. You saw in the new portal, of course, there's different prices for different configurations. We can create resource groups, networks. All the configuration we need for the VM is now in the new portal as well as through PowerShell. So certainly want to use the new portal there. Things that you create through the new portal might look different in the current portal, so once you switch, it might be best if you stick with that one going forward all the way to general available. Now, when you saw that we clicked new and next, and we created the G-Series VM, we had the option to select Windows Server 2012, but there were also a couple of other options. We saw Ubuntu, Linux, we saw a website, we saw all these things. Now, the neat thing with the new portal is it also delivers what is called the Azure VM Marketplace. And vendors will have the opportunity to publish a pre-configured configuration into this Azure VM Marketplace. It allows you to select a certain type of VM, so A-series, D-series, G-series. But what's in the VM is already pre-configured. So from your favorite ISV, you can actually just select that one. It is configured. Most of the times you bring your own license into there, but it saves you all the setting up of the application, of the operating system. And it's curated by Microsoft, so that's a good thing. So there's a couple of options in there already. And if we go back to the new portal, here we go. And we go to new. This is where we see a couple of options like Ubuntu, but also this is where things like the resource group really come into play, where we can deploy a SharePoint server farm. So it will deploy all the bits needed to run a SharePoint server farm. And of course, you could still use Office 365, but maybe there's a specific dev test you'd need. We can enter the username, password. We get some other configuration settings, like for the domain controller, for the SQL servers, and for SharePoint. And that's it. It gets deployed on the series you selected. It creates the resource groups and sets up a SharePoint farm for you. Now, this, of course, is a Microsoft example. But if you go to the marketplace and we leave it on everything, there's a lot you could search for. For instance, maybe there's a vendor you want to use for enterprise notifications called Durdock, a German company that delivers a system center integration for notifications. You would just want to configure it. You want to bring your own license, for instance. You could select any of these options, and it would create the VM and the proper application settings for you. Or maybe it's, for instance, the Barracuda message archiver, where you want to start archiving some of those Office 365 messages. You could certainly just create your Barracuda messages archiver from here. And when we click create, we get to see that this one is actually based on Linux. We provide some of the basic Linux configuration settings, and the VM gets deployed. And again, you can just use the VM pre-configured as well. So it really helps you configure all these applications, run them in Azure instantly, and there's a big marketplace on pretty much everything. You see a couple of categories here, like web, mobile, developer services, media, identity, et cetera. So the VM marketplace is pretty cool. So it helps you deploy some of these workloads that you otherwise might need to configure yourself. Now, the other thing to consider is that with this D-series VMs, with these solid state drives, that disconnected my session, not a problem. The premium storage lets us choose this same solid state backed storage for our storage in Windows Azure. So we can take the high IOPS, we can take the low latency to run intensive workloads, not only VMs, but everything else using Azure Storage as part of the new premium storage offering. This is still in preview, so if you want to enable this, you need to go into the Azure portal, enable it for your subscription, and when creating storage containers and storage volumes, you can now select the premium options, and it will be backed by solid-state drives. So similar to D-Series, it supports up to 32 disks backed for storage for larger sizes. And this way we can achieve, again, up to almost 50,000 IOPS per VM for larger sizes and the local cache, which is almost a millisecond or less. So premium storage as preview now coming available later. Now, the thing I'd like to consider as well is another option that was GA'd, I think, in November or December. It's called Azure Files. What it essentially does is it puts SMB on top of Azure Storage. So we can talk to it from our Windows servers and even other servers that talk SMB, like Linux, on top of Azure Storage. That means that if we have inter-VM storage movements, we don't need to rely on another VM to host the file server role. We can natively have Azure run the file server role, if you will, the file role on top of this storage and give you SMB 2.1 access for your apps. It's easy. We can use it, as we know today, through Windows Server. We can map a drive. We can connect to this file share. But it's also available through REST if you want to go use it from apps and use it programmatically. And because it's built on top of Azure Storage, we can use the same functionality we do for regular storage on things like availability settings, scalability, like geo redundancy we can select, and then have SMB run on top of that. There's a limit of 5 terabytes per share, which should be sufficient for most scenarios, I guess, and up to 1 terabyte files per share. You would run quickly out of storage, I guess, if you have 5 of those. And it's up to 1,000 IOPS per share and roughly 60 megabytes per second throughput. So it's for these interconnected scenarios where you want to move files around, you need storage between VMs, between apps, you can look at Azure Files. So this is something I prepared. We'll go back into the new portal. Here we are. And what we do is we go to the browse section, we say everything, and we go to storage. Where it is? There we go. And there's a couple of things I created. Well, the VM that we just created is still provisioning. We have virtual storage and virtual machines that I've created as containers within my Azure subscription. If you go to virtual storage, and those are created standard geo redundant, and I expand it a bit. Here we go. Then we see the blade for this virtual storage. And if we click on file shares, here we go, there's a new option on file shares that you can use. But what we're going to do is we're going to use it through PowerShell, so you can be programmatic about it. So what I've done is I've created a PowerShell script, which allows me to connect to Azure. We're going to create a file share on top of this Azure storage, and we're going to use it from either the A1 or D1 VM we just created. So let's see if we can make that work. The first thing we'll do is we'll connect to my Azure subscription, because we need to have a connection, of course. Here we go. So we're connected, and we'll say get Azure subscription, which allows us to give us an overview of the two subscriptions. Here is my first and my second subscription, and it's telling me which subscription is default. In this case, my MSDN subscription is default. Now, the storage container we created, and for those of you familiar with storage, you get a key that allows you access to this storage container. So what we're going to do is say new Azure storage context. So within the script, this is the virtual storage container we're going to use, and this is the key that allows us access. So we'll say my storage context, and then we want to see if there's already any Azure file shares available. So we'll say get Azure storage share of this virtual storage container, and it comes up empty because there's no file share, so that's good. And then the new thing we can now do is say new Azure storage share. So I'm going to call it Azure file share, and it's going to be on top of this virtual storage container, and we're going to use it as the variable called my share. So we'll say create new. And so we now have an Azure file share. And the thing you can do is, of course, we could now map it, go to Windows Server. But just to show you that it's all available through PowerShell as well, we're going to say we want to create a directory, an empty new directory in this file share with the name of test. So we say new Azure storage directory in the share we just created and a path called test. There we go. Now there's a test, and you can already see here directory virtualstorage.file.core.windows.net/Azure File Share, which is the web dev name, and then a directory called test. Let's do a directory listing. You can do that through get Azure storage file. Here we go. It's still empty. And what I did is I created a file called test file, and it contains hello people of SCU. So you see it's no smoke and mirrors. And this file is now on my laptop, and I want to upload this file into this file share on Azure. So we're going to say set the file contents. That's this one. Let me check if I selected it. Yep, there we go. Run. Okay. And if we now do that same directory listing of the test directory, there we go. So there's now a file called testfile.txt on the Azure file share that we've created through PowerShell, uploaded through PowerShell. And of course, there's options like you see here, downloading a file, deleting a file. So anything you can do through the new portal, you can of course do through PowerShell as well with some Azure PowerShell commandlets. So to show you that it works, we're going to go into the D1 VM again. Let me stop this and make sure my VM doesn't run this anymore. There we go. Now, this is just a VM running in the same subscription as where I did the Azure file share. And I want to map the drive to this server so I can use it for, I don't know, application purposes. So if I go to SU, what I did is I prepared, there we go, the statement. So it's the statement you all know, the net use, or you go into the file explorer and say map network drive. We're going to map the Z drive, like you see here. And then this is the file share we just saw. And the name and password is actually the name of the storage container, and the password is the key you actually got when creating the storage container for management access. So this is the command we want to run. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me copy that. Let me go into a command prompt. That should be coming up. Here we go. Double click it. And then we should be able to paste it in. Do net use. Go back to this PC. And now we have a Z drive. If we click on that, it just acts like a normal file share with a directory. And if we open it up here, there we go. It's Hello People of SU. And the other way around, if I go to the other VM, so I go to the A1, I think it just that's the one that just disconnected. You can do the other way around, use the file from, map the drive from there. We can now do inter-VM communication without really depending on either of the VMs because the storage in the file share itself is geo-redundant and available for any of those VMs. So let's stop this one as well. We'll say, here we go. Open up the command prompt. And this is where you see the difference between an A1 and a D1, because the temp storage, also where my page file is by default, is on a regular drive. The VM acts slightly slower than when using the D drive like we just did on the D series. So command prompt, here we go. Hit paste, should be able to connect from this VM as well. And it should show up as a Z drive. And it works. We'll say 2015. Should have probably closed it on the other side. Oh, we did. Save it. Yep. Go back from the A1 to the D1. Open it up. And there we go. So it's a mechanism of having high availability of a file share through SMB, but also through REST on storage you have already in Azure, which you can then use. So that's one of the new features that was announced as well. So going back to the deck, what else is new in Azure infrastructure? Well, VM extensions. We now have the power to extend the VM from outside of the VM. And how do we do that? There's a VM agent that if you choose to do so, and it's a default option, that gets deployed into your Windows Server operating system, and from Azure, from outside, we can now manage the VM, do things like adding extensions to your VM from the new Azure portal. Now, this is where also the partner ecosystem kicks in, so there's a couple of extensions that Microsoft deliver, but there's also extension from other parties like Chef for automating your workloads, Puppet, there's Symantec extensions, and we'll show a couple of these. Where you decide whether or not you want to enable these into your VM, for instance, part of the provisioning process, so you can manage them going further with these technologies. Now, one of the cool things is that you get free Microsoft antivirus and anti-malware with the Azure deployment. So if you run the, you deploy the VM through extensions, you can now say, I want to enable the Microsoft anti-malware, the forefront agent, if you will, on the VM, and deploy that in your commute role. And the cool thing about the configuration, both through PowerShell and the new portal, is that I can say what are the settings I want to deliver on this extension as well. So for antivirus, that would be what's the schedule on scanning, what's the real-time setting, etc. And it gives you integrated monitoring whether or not the extension is still active, and for you maybe to repair if it fails. So we'll go back to the new portal. And I'm hoping, here we go. That's not what I wanted to do. Go back home. Well, this one's still creating, so what I'll take the standard D1 for time. We'll do this, and I'll go to remote into that VM. Where are we? Standard D1, here are we. First to show it's not smoke and mirrors, so I'll close these windows. And I'll go to add remove programs. There we go, uninstall a program. And the only thing I have running at the moment is the Microsoft Monitoring Agent. That's the one that I use for Azure Op Insights, which we'll talk about in a second. And so there's nothing else, no antivirus, et cetera, right? So I go back to the new portal. I'm in the standard D1 blade, so the configuration for this VM. And we should be able to go to all settings. And it It's hiding from me. There we go. Here we go, extensions. So the thing that is enabled by default is the background info. So when I log in, I get the IP address, the name. But then now is a button called add. And you get to enable a new resource, a new extension, if you will. And again, these are curated by Microsoft. So I can add the Chef client, the McAfee endpoint protection. But the one I'm looking for is the Microsoft anti-malware. Gives you some information on what's enabled by default. We can say create. We can exclude files from here, real-time protection, scheduled scans, blah, blah. We'll leave it default and say create. And now you see on the left-hand side here that it's actually adding the extension to the virtual machine. It's probably going to take maybe a minute or maybe a minute or two for it to jump in and configure this extension for you. I'm sorry. So this is going to get added. No need to do anything else. Again, you can do it through PowerShell as well. Be programmatic about it and enable antivirus on your VMs. So we'll come back to that in a second. The other thing you already saw was the Microsoft Monitoring Agent, which is a precursor to the fact that I'm using Azure Operational Insights. And Azure Operational Insights gives you the ability to do monitoring of your environment, of your VMs, of your workloads, if you will. It allows you to use it as a service. So it's an Azure service that you can directly attach to, which has powerful search capabilities. We can use it for root cause analysis, and we can troubleshoot across multiple data sources. And the cool thing is, just like with Operations Manager, there's this concept of intelligence packs. Currently, there's a couple that Microsoft delivers through the gallery, but you could certainly see third parties building them in the future, where you can take an intelligence pack, add it to Azure Operational Insights. Like with Operations Manager, it gets deployed to the VMs, and you get data back and new functionality within the portal for monitoring. Now, you can connect directly. If you don't have Operations Manager today, that's fine. Just hook up your VMs directly to Azure Opt Insights. If you do have Operations Manager running, perfect, because we can actually take that data or parts of that data and hook it up to Azure Opt Insights. Now, we can use it through the web, but there's also a Windows Phone app to use if you're on the road, want to analyze some of that data, you're connecting from the phone app to the Azure service. So, very cool there, and we have the ability to create our own dashboards, which I'll try and show now. So for this, we need to go into another URL called opinsights.azure.com. There we go. Gives you a bit of info on OpInsights itself, on what it does, how it does so, and how to use it. There's actually a free version, and there's two premium versions you can use. And it's based on the volume of data that you have. So essentially, you're paying for the storage behind it. If you have a smaller environment or a dev test, or you want to just try it out, you can certainly use the free mode from here. So once I log in with my account, I get into the overview page. I can go into servers and usage. There we go. And in my case, two servers are connected. I go here, and you see that's basic A1 and standard D1 that are hooked up already. I've pre-configured them, and those are sending data into Azure Ops Insights. So that's pretty cool. Now, if I go into intelligence packs, here we go. This is where you have the gallery, and you have things like the AD assessment intelligence pack, malware assessment, change tracking, et cetera, log management, capacity planning. Now, if you click on those, you actually get more details. For instance, this one will tell you you need to hook up OM and VMM to get data from here, but you can use it as an additional service from the cloud, extra to OM to give you some of that capacity planning. We'll go back. The one intelligence pack I already have enabled is the system update assessment. So if I click here, you actually see that one of two servers is missing updates. And then if we zoom in, you see it's actually standard D1 that's missing 9 updates. And we can filter further. So we can say, well, I want to see a certain security update. I want to maybe search even further. So here is where you get into the powerful search analysis. But if you just want to have an overview, just take the intelligence pack, look at the overview page, and you can certainly use it from here as well. Now, if we go into log management here, we haven't configured the log management intelligence pack yet, so I'll do so now. I'll say I want to monitor the system event log. I'll say plus. And then the things I care about for now is the informational. I'll say save. So from now on, it will be able to catch all these events that happen in the system event log as part of being an informational event for my standard A1 and standard D1. And going to the D1, where are the A1 I meant? Where are we? There we go. This is the A1. We'll have a look because it was actually rebooted yesterday. So when we, it's reconnecting. When we look into the event viewer, maybe best if we go to the D1. Is everybody using up all the bandwidth in this room? Yeah. Let me try and reconnect. Not sure why it's not connecting. Give it a second, maybe try that. Well, either way, what I wanted to show you guys is that it was rebooted, so in the system event log, there was an event. Oh, there it comes up again. Everybody's downloading the video, right? Event viewer. Let us quickly have a look. There we go. Windows logs, the system log. Let's filter out some stuff and say the thing I'm interested in is event ID 1074 and the source is user 32. Just look it up, that's the event that will give you an informational on a reboot. User 32, here we go. Say, okay. Oh, my resolution. Let's go. Here we go. Still not working for me. Ah, always hate that when that happens. Is this working? Yeah, whoop. All right, so we should see that, for instance here, there's a restart event where there's an initiation of the restart by a user called SEU for the following reason, other unplanned, so didn't put a reason. And those are the things you might care about where you say, in my Azure environment, within the VMs, are they rebooting and how frequently are they rebooting and such. So I'll go back here. And so what you can now do is say, I want to use the Data Explorer, and I want to start drilling down on some of these items. And so I can just type here or take some of the prefab searches that are available. Now, just to show you, this is going to be in the category system, and I'll take query already prepared. Here we go. Go back into the portal. Hit enter. Well, I guess because I just configured the intelligence pack, it's not showing up. But what I did is I'm going to tell it to look for an event with the name of shutdown from system using event ID 1074. And those would be things that would then show up. I can filter through date, time, etc. Now, once you have these searches in place or you want to make use of the searches that Microsoft provides, there's an option to say, I want to create my dashboard and maybe say customize. And I can take these searches and then I can say show all, for instance, go down, when did my service initiate restart, hit the plus symbol, and it shows up as a tile on my dashboard. I can say, well, I want to have numbers, no restarts initiated, so that's fine. Gives me a bit of insight. And I'll say customize, and that way I can take all these searches and create my own dashboard. Now, the cool thing is This is from, of course, my web browser. If we're gonna look at my Windows phone, and I'll open it up. Here we go. This is live. It should be connected. And if you look in the Microsoft Store, there is operational insights. There we go. It should actually show up the operational insights app from Microsoft. And you see here, you can use it. I've already installed it. So if I hit view, here we see the operational insights. Click it. And then it should actually show my custom dashboard, the one we just created with the one tile. So it's logging in through Wi-Fi. Here we go. My dashboard, it just has one tile. And if I click here, I can do the same thing. Or if I go back, I can go to the overview page again, which we just saw, where there's system update assessment. And I can get an overview on the road through my Windows phone as part of this cloud service. So that's pretty cool and available for all Apps Insight subscribers. All right, let us go back to the standard D1 and see if the Forefront agent was installed. Where is it hiding? Here we are. Go back. And I should probably refresh. There we go. And now we see that System Center Endpoint Protection is enabled. And if I log out and log in, I will have the icon in my sys tray. So let's try. Here we go. Sign out. Go back to the D1. Connect. And so this is a pretty cool way to use the VM extensions to deploy all of the security and management capabilities to your VM in an automated way. Well, it's probably going to show up in a couple of seconds. So the demo worked. That's fine. Perfect. All right. So that's extensions and Azure Ops Insights as a brief overview. What else is new? I could probably create another 20 slides on what's new, but some of the highlights, and Brad called it out as well, is there's now remote app. So it's like RDS as a service where we can take our apps, publish them through Azure Remote App, and have the customer connect through its screen. There's Express Route for networking where we can just have our dedicated connection to Azure, not use an internet-based tunnel of sorts to get to your resources, but a dedicated connection. There's VNet to VNet communication. You saw things like static IPs, IP reservation. There's now a migration accelerator, SQL premium options. There's a ton for you guys to look out for. So in summary, a lot have changed. Microsoft's Azure infrastructure as a service is maturing at a rapid pace, and I certainly encourage you guys to check it out and see what works for your organization. So thank you for attending, and have a great System Center Universe.